Welcome to Try Not to Blink. Today's show is going to confess the hardest things we're dealing with in private practice right now. We're going to discuss innovative services we utilize in clinic and give a primer course on radio frequency and eye care.
How do you stay competitive in a market today that is changing? You know, there even we talked about online orders. What about things becoming more automated, AI? There's going to be different ways of finding prescriptions. We all have to up the game to stay relevant.
We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible. Makers of stellar gas-permeable lenses and the incredible custom-stable scleral lens. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Roya Habibi, and joining me is Dr. Sheila Morrison. Let's go, girl. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Oh, I had a hectic day. You know, I feel like as a practice owner now, it's like you wear so many hats. And my hat today was like organizer, builder, contractor.
Wait, like literally building, like putting things together?
Yeah, actually. Like I was putting together, with I'm tools. Trying to install this mirror. Like this is full length mirror. We're like finishing off our aesthetic room. And we had like in our optical lab, we've had just boxes. It's just kind of like our storage room slash lab. And today, like Patrick is on vacation and he's at a family wedding. So I was like, let's be productive. So we just cleaned everything. Like it's so beautifully organized. My team, Dr. Fabi, Dr. Danny, they were like, we just like worked perfectly today. And we found all these big boxes that, you know, do you keep equipment boxes?
So it's interesting. Honestly, I kind of do.
We do too.
It's like just depending.
Yeah. Taking huge space.
They do. And you never know if you're going to have to send it back, if it breaks
exactly.
down. Maybe you're going to resell it when you upgrade it. Who knows?
Exactly.
Who knows why we do this?
They're huge.
Separate storage for the boxes.
I know. Well, so we've been using some of the boxes because we haven't finished all the furniture for our upstairs floor. And so we've been using the boxes as like side tables and stuff. So today I went in and I redesigned. We have what's going to be a meeting space that's currently Patrick's office, but it's just been like so janky. It's been like storage room slash office. He's just like sits against a wall looking at a white wall. So today with like three large boxes, I made him a desk, like a L-shaped desk.
Aww,
it's actually lovely.
Nice.
So yeah,
why
that
not?
Was my...
It's going to get the job done. And then did you put a nice like tablecloth on it to make it look nice?
Well, so I like here's the other hat. I was like designing our aesthetic room and I mismeasured. I don't really know how. I do know how. I'm switching back and forth between metric and standard unit or English unit, whatever. And I miscalculated. And so I measured the countertop of her space too short. Like it doesn't even fit a sink on the countertop because I measured it too short. Luckily, I made it out of melamine. So it's not that it wasn't a huge expense, but it was disappointing because I had to wait like 6 weeks to get the new countertop
well,
and stuff.
I know things take a long time. Supplies are not fast in Costa Rica. You can't just run down the street to Home Depot.
Right.
And pick
super
up
annoying.
Your dream cabinet, you know?
Super, super annoying. Ugh. Yeah. So we had to get a new one, but I already bought the first one. So I actually used that countertop on top of the boxes for Patrick's desk.
Weren't you the one that mentioned, like, in the beginning of your practice, something about a chair that you ordered that ended up being, like, the wrong size for a human being or something like that?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was, you know, to be honest, that part was just, like, disturbing because we bought it from a optometry selling company. Like it is an optometry chair.
Tell us what the problem was, Roya, because I remember I kind of vaguely remember it's ringing a bell because now we're talking another wrong size
yes.
piece of furniture. This is not the
yes.
first time for you.
Troubleshooting.
What's the common denominator,
yes.
Roya?
Honest to God, I don't even know how that happened or who would use this in the entire world because this is a legitimate distributor. Like they were, it was a legitimate distributor. Like even the paperwork looked all legit. We buy this beautiful white chair and stand combination set, but the chair couldn't go. Let me think about this. So I say it right. Basically, you had to be like 4.5 feet tall to sit in the chair with your chin on the chin rest. Because the chair right. wouldn't go down enough and the table couldn't go high enough for even someone you or my size to sit and put your face in comfortably. Let alone someone who's 6 feet, right?
Oh, God. Did you send it back? I can't remember what you did. I just remember this being
disgusting. We did, actually. Like, they eventually gave in to our, like, I was just mortified. I mean, it was way more than a complaint. I was outraged because I was like,
did you give a bad Google review?
That wouldn't have even, like, this was like.
Your anger was beyond that, hey?
I don't think a Google review would have even touched what we needed. But ultimately, like, they had given us a flyer that showed us the specs and the dimensions, which all made sense, which I don't know who would ever think, let me make sure this all makes sense so that when you sit in it, your chin's going to fit in the chin rest for a average size person. But then they referenced a 95-page manual and they said, oh, in the new manual, there's a change to the specs. And I was like, why would I have ever looked in the 95-page manual? Anyways, I feel like I could really go off on that and just get really, like, my blood boiling. But luckily that was fixed. And then we imported spa chairs and the rest is history. And we have Topcon stands. But so I do actually... you go first.
I'm kind of interested in hearing about, like, this aesthetic room that you're doing, because I actually didn't realize that you're already in motion of doing...
We are so in motion. Well, I want to tell you about it, but I want to know what the hardest thing you're dealing with is in clinic.
Oh, so many things. You know how it is? It's like the good, the bad. It's all part of the... Probably... okay. So you want to hear something challenging. So...
Yes.
Well, one of the challenges we've had that has been discussed a lot on our doctor team lately, as our practice grows into, you know, we have a really strong kind of specialty practice. So we have ocular disease and glaucoma. We have really strong in medical contact lens, dry eye, and myopia control. And so especially for those of us that are residency trained, our clinic tends to be just full of, you know, our follow-ups for specialty lenses, 15 minutes a bit, you know, just follow-up. And those are not necessarily always revenue generating. Granted, right. Our business model is very profitable for specialty, but still at the end of the day, when we really evaluate everything, and this has been something we've known for a while, is that despite all the specialty, despite the, you know, the fees that are charged for all these things, the highest revenue generating for optometrists, including our practice, still remains to be comprehensive eye exams with glasses. And so what we're finding is that when we're full, it's hard to kind of manage the schedule in a way that's actually maximizing our optical, maximizing doctor time. Yes. And so that's been rough with the schedule because, as you know this, I mean, people are, you know, there's sometimes a big wait list to see you. So patients are thinking, oh my gosh, there's not anything appropriate on the green spots for contact lens for, like, you know, 4 weeks. Dr. Morrison wants to see them back in 2 weeks. I got to fit him in. So we've had to actually really have, you know, training and where we block off. Once again, we've done it before, but enforce, you know, these are eye exam spots and these are follow-up spots because more time, you know, dilations could be put out. But just trying to find the time for routine eye care, because as much as we live and breathe and love all the specialties, my challenge personally in the clinic has been to really make sure to give proper respect to just basic optometry, really include everything in there. And include our routine eye exams with revenue for the optical, because that's a really easy, you know, you don't see them for follow-ups. We'll see them for their eye exam. Go
easy.
Take them out.
One,
to
two
our
punch.
Expert.
You know
opticians.
Exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One, two punch. See you in 12 months or whatever it is.
Yep. Yep.
So that's a challenge for me, honestly. And it's been coming up a lot lately. Well, you know, just been crazy busy and I want more eye exams. I had a couple the other day and I was like, this is such a nice day. Paperwork is so much less. It's so
lovely. I was going to say, like, it's like zero thought. Maybe like 2% thought, and you're like, have a pleasant conversation. No one's like stressed about anything except the fact that you're making their eyes better. And it, you know, on the same topic at one of my new roles has also been, because we're just this small little clinic, is I am in charge of the optical essentially, which I've never really had to do at all since basically Berkeley.
Like, what are you?
I know
of?
It's like
your training is not in.
We've always had opticians, and I mean, since I worked at Berkeley, like since I was a student at Berkeley, I haven't worked in an optical lab. So it's been a huge learning lesson. I don't know if I've shared yet. But at the office, we Well, I'm still going to save it because we're still going through a couple paperwork to make something super official for our lab. But being in charge of an optical is extremely hard, and I don't think we're taught well enough about it on frame selection. And it's like the bane of my existence. It's like I am constantly almost like defending myself on what brands, or not, sorry, not even brands, what frames I've picked. You know, a patient comes in and they're like, I didn't see anything. You're like, but did you see that? You know, like, it's like you pick so many beautiful frames, but someone doesn't find her. Like, you don't have any oversized frames or you don't have any wrap frames. And you're like, damn it. I just, like, someone just walked out with the 3 that I bought or whatever. It's hard.
Do you find yourself, well, now maybe you're kind of trying to be conscious, but initially, did you find yourself choosing frames that suited your fashion, or how did you perceive, like, how do you choose what is stylish?
It's such a hard question. I mean, I tried to be subjective.
To everybody.
I know. I tried to be objective in the beginning and be like, these are cool. Like, I wouldn't wear them, but someone's going to like these. And then I realized that even though that statement is obviously true, I still had to buy for the people walking into our store. Like, an example is I live in a place that doesn't go below 80 degrees very often at all. Fahrenheit. That's like 20 something. Still in my Celsius.
It's hot. It's warm.
It's
there.
Hot. It's real
a little
hot.
Sweaty, humid.
It's humid nonstop. And that's just like the low of 80s. That's the lowest, really. And so as you can imagine, nose pads or metal frames, I don't know why, but like people just don't tend to gravitate to them as much. Like I have beautiful metal frames right now and they're just not very popular. Like some people just come in and they are a loyal metal wearer, but if someone doesn't have a preference or if it's a new glasses wearer, they rarely pick metal. And they always give the excuse that I don't like it because it makes it so slippery. We both know that a well-fit frame, doesn't matter metal or plastic, is going to feel good, but people just don't tend to buy metal by me. So like my frame board is probably 70% acetate, 30% metal, maybe a little bit different than that. But kind of like the more I buy metal, I buy these beautiful metal frames. And unless they're standout different, people just don't get them. It's weird.
Did you learn the hard way in the beginning where you had stock that didn't sell enough? And then what do you do there? Like I know here we have, our optical is quite large and we'll have reps that come in with recommend. And if things that don't sell after a certain amount of time, depending on what kind of deal we had with them, sometimes they'll even take frames back and swap them out for new frames, depending. Yep. Do you have that option in Costa Rica?
Sort of. Yeah. Like we definitely don't have the people coming and looking and bringing the selection so we can see and touch and all that, which would be really nice.
Where you have
we do not have
Friday.
Those. Yeah, I know. I remember
maybe
watching.
Maybe you should get them with destination options. They might want to come for a little holiday. Yeah.
I know. Hopefully soon. Eventually we'll be on the map. But no, they don't come and they don't bring coffee and they don't do any of that here. But
they don't bring treats for you and everybody.
It is literally the biggest, like, I feel like I was a very thankful person. I liked my reps, but I did not thank my reps enough. I miss them. I want my crumble cookies. I want my coffee, all the little snacks and just like the conversation,
well, the
like break
training,
up the day.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
We have,
I know. I'm joking, but it is really
the days
that.
In your practice having the food, the education, you know, the perks for the office. It's just, it's
100%.
So nice. I mean, we had two people
teasing
in
about
week,
that, but that is still, yeah, they do provide so much more than that. Right.
Yeah.
Do you ever ask them to like train your, do you ever like take up on those offers?
Yes. And we've started to do that intentionally because, you know, it's just such a nice benefit when we looked, as our office, you know, we did a big expansion last year, our staff now, we have like about 30 people. It is really hard to really get everybody on the same page. And our reps in the industry are a wonderful resource in all areas of optometry. They are more than willing with budgets to come in and bring lunch and education. So we'll give them certain topics that we want to hit, you know, related to whatever, you know, whatever company they're with. And we can really customize that. And it's been fabulous for our office. It's a huge perk for the staff. It's fun. The reps like it because they get to interact. And it's just a win-win. It's the greatest.
Love that. I love that idea.
Do you have favorite brands like in your, so do you find, so we, Do you buy off of your favorite sort of personal brands, or do you keep a log of what patients buy and then buy more of that? Or how do you really kind of, what drives your decision?
So what's kind of unique in Costa Rica is that we don't have to go buy insurance because we don't accept insurance, right? So a lot of times, whether you have VSP, you have to have a certain number of, you know, like there were rules about which frames you had to carry to get your best return. And we don't have to play that game down here. So actually what I felt strongly about since we opened is I wanted only independent frame lines. So only companies that are small companies or independent from the larger Lanzotica chain, which people regularly come in asking for things like Ray-Ban or some of the fancier lines that are in the Lanzotica mark, which are great. Like no knock on them, but also our largest competition is owned by Lanzotica. So there's no point in us trying to compete with that. Like we literally cannot compete with that. So anyways, I felt strongly about getting small brands. So my number one brand right now, number one selling, I love the brand. It's perfect for our market, is a company called Rain, R-A-E-N, out of Carlsbad, California. It's amazing. It's, again, like I said, surfer brand, but it's, you know, modern shapes, great price point, and durable, high quality acetate. A lot of their sunglasses are polarized. The quality of lens is really good. So I'm all about that. What I've noticed in ordering glasses, which I was never turned on to this before, which I don't know why, maybe I was just naive, but just like with ordering, especially custom lenses, we start having our favorites. Maybe it's because it gets to you really close, or you have a favorite rep that you talk to, or a consultant that you talk to. I've learned that I have favorite brands. Like, I'm not going to knock the ones that are not my favorite, but it's like, I don't get as quick response by email, or a lot of frame companies, actually what we've been really tapping into, especially because we're new and we have really high expenses, being that we're only a year old, is we've been ordering a lot off of vintage lines. So it's like a year-ish or just last season's glasses that, instead of maybe their normal price point, let's say brand X, their normal price point for a optical frame is, let's just say, $80. The vintage line or the archive line, they all have different names, or discount line, will be like 40 or 50% wholesale. So then usually it's a beautiful frame. It's usually even still on their website. So we don't necessarily even mark that down. We get the same, give the same price point as the normal frame would be. And it's a better return for us. So
I love that, especially yeah. when you refer to it as vintage. That just ups, I know, right? The exclusive. Yeah, it's like, it's vintage.
It's vintage.
Of course, that's the best.
Patient doesn't care. Like, it's still, usually yeah. It's just like a later color that they're not making anymore. Yeah. Or maybe they just don't have that many frames left or whatever. Like, they just decide for whatever reason to put things on vintage or discount or end of line. They all have different names.
Smart.
But
that's,
it's
a
nice way to. Yeah, exactly.
But is your percentage pretty high right now, because you're kind of starting out and your main business in your offices remains to be eye exams and glasses?
A lot of eye exam, glasses, and contacts. Contacts are growing. So, contacts, people are kind of weird here. They tend to only buy like a box or two at a time. So we're really trying to instigate, like, you know, better
annual
buying
supply.
Habits. Exactly. Because it's also very hard to get contacts here. It's a huge thing.
So if you're going to get contacts, like, get a bulk order so you don't have to do this over and over and over.
I know. It's such a pain in the butt, but we're working on that.
Do people buy online over there the way that they do in North America?
Not really, which is good. The people who do, they tend to buy, and they'll like be taking a trip to the U.S. for some reason, or someone's coming to visit, so they'll order. Or maybe they split time, so they'll do it when they're home, or they'll go to Costco, right? But it's hard to order things here.
Do you have Costco?
We do not have Costco. So they'll go in the U.S. They're going home and they want to go back to Costco, which I don't blame them. I miss Costco too.
One thing that's cool about online ordering is I've noticed a shift definitely in our office in the past few years of some of the competition that we would face with, you know, just random online ordering is sort of fading away the more that we adopt another practice builder tip, I guess, on challenges that we deal with that we're kind of mitigating, that we've actually been quite successful, is We don't compete as much anymore because our infrastructure that we've built in includes options to buy online from our online store with a lot of direct shipping.
Ooh, nice. And we also,
yes, it's pretty great.
For and contact actually, lenses, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And beautiful. It's actually, there are programs out there, and I think we talked about this on an earlier episode in terms of like making it very easy for patients, because in the world we live in, if it's not easy, I'm not doing it. I know personally for me, it's not 100%. Convenient enough. You know, I've got a small child, work a lot. I'm not even as bad as many as far as convenience rules. I'm not doing it. And so, so we have, structures and programs in place where patients can actually online order without talking to anybody. And the other thing that we have for, it happened today is we still do keep price comparison sheets, that are just literally hard copies that we update all the time that the staff have at the front desk to deal with, objections. And in reality, if you look at private practices and what, like, for example, our pricing on a lot of, you know, commonly ordered online orders are actually now cheaper on 6 month and annual supplies. Patients can usually cut pretty good deals on like buying a box out there for, you know, probably about the same, if not like a little cheaper. But when it comes to 6 month and annual supplies for all the major companies, it's no break. It's, we're definitely beyond competitive. It's really great. And a lot of them offer like instant rebates that patients don't deal with anymore the way it used to be, kind of a hassle to get that savings. Yep. It's been pretty good.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, we went through and edited our pricing for our contact lenses to basically match the 1-800 contacts one. Contacts aren't obviously a bread and butter kind of thing, but if I'm going to do the work, I'd rather get the sale. And if I say that it's the same as 1-800 contacts, then it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Another little tip and trick that I'm sure many do already is making sure that patients understand that when products come from us, we have some control over how to help them if they need something adjusted. So we'll take back unopened boxes. In fact, a lot of our companies are quite good. Even if there was a doctor change or something that came up, you know, they will be somewhat flexible on even open boxes, depending. We don't advertise that, of course. We say unopened, but there's always a little wiggle room. And so the same goes for our spectacle sales, for example. Again, today I had these conversations with people. I do it every single day, especially patients with prescriptions that have like really anything I'll use as a reason that, you know, they're complicated enough that, you know, if there was anything that needed to be adjusted, it's a lot easier to come and deal with me because I have full control over the products that I make and sell and can adjust them at no cost kind of thing versus 100%. The sort of runaround of having to ship something back to somebody else, go back to other offices. Just by making sure that they're aware of that sometimes is the difference of tipping between a sale closed in your office and out the door online or to another office.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like kind of commenting on your thing about having the online website thing, I will, full disclosure, maybe like a year ago before we have a US company that we use to be able to get certain products that we can't get or trials or whatever that we like coordinate orders through basically. But what was I just saying? Lost my train of thought. Ah, shucks. Gone.
Story about online sales. Let's do this. Let's walk backwards. This is like a fun puzzle to figure out where the thought was going. So online sales, we have our online store, and no word of a lie, truth be told, you did something that was maybe really, really bad related to online sales is what I'm guessing.
Sales.
Darn. I feel like if it's really important, those things that you sort of forget and then you just remember out of the blue when you're not trying to think about it.
I know. At the very end, we'll wrap back in.
For sure today or out of one day, it'll be like in a month.
And you'll we'll be like, wait, I'll comment on the on this post when it's posted in 1 month from now, I'm going to post it in the comments. By the way, this is what I meant to say.
Yes, but and I'll put a sticky note to remind myself what you were talking about.
Precisely. I'll listen to it and be like, darn it, that's what I meant.
Do you ever get it in clinic where you're asking a question of a staff member and by the time they make their way back to you to answer your question, you've already forgotten what it was?
It's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Absolutely.
It's gone. So yeah, life is crazy.
Speaking of private practice, the craziness, I want to take a minute to chat about our sponsor. To be real for a second, we didn't start clinics to solely manage a schedule, build an online presence, remember the questions you wanted to ask, organize your phone trees. You did it to take care of people. And that's actually why you need Weave. Sheila, what's Weave?
We have the premium phone system. We know that it integrates your patient software, plus a whole suite of solutions like texting, reminders, online scheduling. So along the lines of what we're talking about today, when it comes to, you know, setting up systems for better ease of patients to operate with your business, offers reviews, options, payments, and more. We've also makes it easy to keep a full schedule. So you can kind of stack up your life and getting you paid faster to keep your practice running smoothly, because it takes some of that work away by doing it automatically. So you can really focus on taking care of your patients. Since it's all on one platform, staff don't always need to manage these things. And you don't also need to pay for multiple different pieces of software to run your office. So it's kind of no wonder that many practices do use Weave and save their staff more than 3 hours a day, boosting, you know, revenue, et cetera.
I see why, or see why thousands of practices use Weave and why optometry professionals are calling Weave an absolute game changer for their staff and patient experience. Weave has provided an extra special offer for our listeners. Visit getweave.com/blink to get a no commitment demo and a $50 gift card. We'll have that tagged in our show notes.
Now, Ruth, speaking also about thinking outside of the box. So when we look at some of the cool things that we're doing in practice, I'm pretty ready to hear about what's going on in your aesthetics room, because I kind of forgot that you're sort of building, I already know one of the things that we're going to talk a little bit about now in regards to the service that you offer, but what are you doing in your aesthetics room these days? Tell us.
Yeah. So really it's just, I've heard, we had Dr. Selena McGee on probably a year ago at this point, and she was just talking about pillars of her practice, or different ways to, you know, have revenue and provide resources to your patients. And when we got down to Costa Rica and had to pivot on the type of care we provided, and, you know, obviously we're a brand new cold start, no one really knows about us, we had to like just kind of get creative on how to provide care, and honestly just to be able to pay for our staff and pay for our expenses. So as we kind of chugged along, one of the things that we started, or I was actually personally interested in because I had personal experience doing this back in the US, was through microblading. So if you don't know what microblading is a semi-permanent form of tattooing. Essentially, it's a non-tattoo needle. It's kind of like what looks like a quill pen, and you can create these hyper-realistic strokes or hair strokes on your eyebrow to fill in your brow. Essentially, there's different techniques, but to give your brow a more, you know, pronounced look, or a better arch, or whatever it might be. Everyone has different goals. Whether it's someone who has, you know, has issues with their thyroid, maybe they've lost a lot of hair, or with aging, we do lose a lot of hair just in general, but especially on the brows. And then I'm in a beach town. It's like perfect combination, because when you're at the beach, it's harder to wear makeup. And like I said just a couple minutes ago, it's very sweaty here. So anyone who does wear makeup, it sweats off. So it kind of just felt like a really good fit. So we did a little test run and realized that the market is here and totally about it. And we actually invested in our front desk staff who had some experience with tattooing to go through a really like strong, it's usually supposed to take 3 months, international program. It's called FIBRAW. In Costa Rica, the same rules don't apply for aesthetics as they do, at least in the US, it was by state. So a master esthetician is a person who can do it in the US, I believe, or at least in Seattle. But yeah, she went through this training. She's doing an amazing job. It's a very rigorous training, like a lot more than anyone, like even when I see what estheticians go through, it's like a weekend course, and she did months of training. So it's been awesome. I had her do my brows. They're beautiful. I love them, but it's been great. Patients really like it. And then people that come in for that maybe weren't even thinking about their eyes, sign up for an exam on the way out, and vice versa. It's something that we're promoting as well, just to our normal clients. And so it's been kind of a nice crossover, just showing that it's all the same system, right?
So I love this more than, oh my gosh, because we have been a very early adopter in kind of some of these thinking outside of the box ideas. What it comes down to, honestly, where some of these come, well, for number one, patient benefit. So there's new technologies in not only, microblading, honestly, Roya, is something I've never heard of. And I apologize if there are optometrists out there already doing this, but in my world, you're the first I've heard of combining optometry, eye care with microblading. And I love it because it matches kind of the philosophy. One of the things that we've done in a kind of an early adoption way in many offices across North America is bringing in kind of aesthetics into eye care. And I think part of that, there's three reasons. Number one, patient care. So patients, they benefit from these services. We can optimize outcomes with dry eye. Part of dealing with human beings is addressing concerns that do include, how do I look? Patients don't want red eyes. They don't want to have, discomfort's one thing, but the look, that's why I think the brows are just absolutely genius, because we have patients already that are in the clinic that trust us to be making recommendations for products and services around the eyes. That's what we're trained 100%. In. So yeah. Very, very cool. And number two thing that is worth talking about is how do you stay competitive in a market today that is changing? We talked about online orders. What about things becoming more automated, AI? There's going to be different ways of finding prescriptions. We all have to up the game to stay relevant. One of the ways that we differentiate ourselves in optometry from just refraction, et cetera, is providing services that are kind of cutting edge and next level. So aesthetics has been huge in our practice. And so we can talk more about that. I think it's just really, really cool. And then practice building, it's a no brainer. This is all revenue generating things, so we can all survive and, afford to bring in more equipment and pay our staff and again, stay relevant in a world that's always changing. And the microblading, what a genius idea. Cause you're already dealing with the eyes.
Absolutely. Well, and there's so many things I want to ask you about the aesthetics in general, because actually my original goal was to bring in more of an aesthetic base. So get our staff trained on doing Botox around the eyes or getting IPL device. All that's a little bit bigger investment up front. We were just kind of trying to think of creative ways, but the bigger problem, at least for us, number one, is we're always tiptoeing on this line of what are we legally allowed to do, especially because it's different when you're a resident of a country. It's not the same. We kind of walk around with a semi-target on our back, so we don't want to break any rules, right?
So absolutely.
That was one thing. And number two, in our complex, there was a well-established practice for aesthetics. So she's a general practitioner, but does everything from Botox to facelifts, to et cetera, all that. So then we didn't want to get anyone upset with us. So we sort of pivoted. And like I said, the microblading thing was just something I wanted to find for myself. And then the more we talked about it, we were like, this is a perfect setup. But what I'd love to hear a little bit about is, both of us love the idea of treating dry eye, but I want to know a little bit about how you make that first step into it when you're thinking about, aside from, let's just say, even something as simple as providing makeup options or providing makeup removal options or providing skincare tips. What would you say to someone who's trying to think of ways to think outside the box, but maybe doesn't have the, ability to say, let's buy an IPL, right?
I think it starts and it'll be kind of fun. I'd like to invite, Andrea Lasby at some point soon, kind of following this onto the show to talk a little bit about some of the business side and sort of the vision of what happened at our office and kind of where it started. I would say, we did actually start pretty heavy-handed with an IPL that we got fairly early on. But it doesn't always have to be that way. So I think even as simple as starting by educating yourself on what are all the other products and services that would make sense? So patients are going to inherently, I get asked all the time, what is the appropriate makeup for around the eyes? What kind of skincare? So you can start with that. I feel like today a lot of the sort of aesthetic stuff kind of goes hand in hand with that. So you don't necessarily have to have one or you don't have to have both to not have the other. Do you know what I'm saying? So, you can start with things that are as simple as, choose a few lines. We went with products that are, high level ingredients with a long, more of a history of a scientific sort of study on the ingredients and things like that, and brought in reps to kind of educate us and brought lines into the clinic, that are maybe more, inflammatory friendly kind of thing. I mean, our office, I don't know that I could really speak to too basic, because what we did go kind of all out with, and kind of the cool thing that's happened in our practice, where we started off with, you know, learning about treatments that are outside of the box for dry eye, including we started off with, you know, just small basic dry Blefex, and went with like an Ilux, and then next thing you know, kind of grew into IPL radiofrequency. We as doctors started off doing the treatments on patients ourselves. And the way that it really grew was that we just honestly became too busy providing services as doctors. And so we actually hired an esthetician to come in and take over a lot of those treatments. And what it kind of turned into was, you know, beyond just eye care, but, you know, skincare around the eyes. You know, hair removal is possible with an IPL that's kind of similar to, it's the same equipment that's used for IPL for dry eye. So we've really branched into that as well, Raya.
Interesting. With, I need to talk about RF, because we've talked about IPL a little bit in the past, and IPL is super hot, but I feel like I don't know anything about RF. I know that it stands for radio frequency, but why is it used around the eye, especially in the realm? Is it a dry eye treatment? Teach us.
So, yeah, of course. So radio frequency is basically, it's a treatment that's historically been used for skin tightening. I mean, it's a non-surgical method that essentially puts energy waves kind of into, you know, layers of the skin, depending on the tip of the probe of the unit that you use. So okay. It passes energy from one side of the unit to the other through the skin at a variety of different like layers deep. So you can go more shallow or deeper. And basically what it does is the heat stimulates.
Does it have a pen?
It has a variety of different tips. So they're kind of like, we'll say not probes, but most of them have an end of either a pen, or it's usually wider than like a pen tip. So like maybe, you know, a centimeter by a couple centimeters kind of thing, or a little bit smaller.
So a fat tip
that.
Marker. Give us something.
Fat tip marker. Yeah. A little bigger than that, actually. So they're, it's like, you know, it's a good, like almost
like
an inch
one that you would
kind of
draw
thing.
On a car.
Yeah, sure. We'll do. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Even a little more than that. And so, they do have different
chalk that you write on.
Chalk is great. Chalk is great.
Okay.
And so when we use radio frequency, it passes energy through, from one side to the other, basically.
So there's two chalks. And
so it's one with two, there's a variety of different types of tips. So some of them have visibly two like parts of the probe.
Okay.
Some of them you can't really see it, and you kind of just, the inside has little probes that where the energy travels from one to the other. And you can kind of set the level, so you can go deeper, less deep, more superficial, and it passes through, it can actually go deeper into the dermis. And in skin, basically what it does is it stimulates production of collagen.
Okay.
And as you know, collagen is, you know, the most important protein in the body. It really creates the framework of the skin, and it gives your skin firmness. So patients or people with, you know, maybe wrinkles or looser skin around the jowls or whatever else on your body, the radio frequency is a non-surgical way to really tighten up the skin, and, you know, decrease saggy skin and wrinkles. So it's been around for a long time, actually, several decades, believe it or not.
Okay.
And what we've done in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years in the dry eye clinic is utilize that technology to not only tighten, so that this is where aesthetics and dry eye go hand in hand. In the dry eye clinic, what we originally used radio frequency for had nothing to do with skin tightening. We actually used it as a type of dry treatment that generated energy that was able to penetrate deeper than, say, like a heat mask, and to really actually deliver like a slower, deeper heat to my Bowman glands, heating up clogged oils and allowing us to kind of express those a little bit more easily.
Okay.
So as you know, oil, as when it's cold, it's hard, or it can be hard, especially, you know, if in patients that have my Bowman gland dysfunction, they're not getting good tear flow for many years, especially it kind of gets clogged up and really hard like butter, and it can be really difficult to express even when we squeeze the lids. So obviously, you know, if you have hard butter in your glands, even if, you know, even at skin temperature, that little pressure on Blink is not enough to get any oil out at a certain point. So radio frequency was used initially in our practice as kind of a restart, where we could really melt those glands and get those blockages out of the way in a way that was a little bit more effective, a lot more effective than prescribing heat mass and home massage.
So what about compared to like a in-office, like a Lipoflow? Was it that you could totally do longer?
Different. So they're completely, completely different technologies. So okay. Radio frequency usually would do it in a series of treatments. It's kind of like treated like laser hair removal. So it takes more than one treatment for it to kind of work. LipiFlow, it's completely different. LipiFlow does not use radio frequency.
Right, right.
LipiFlow is using heat and pressure. And it definitely, you know, has been shown to be effective as well in unclogging glands. But, you know, if you kind of look across, you know, North America and other countries as well, it definitely has been shown and kind of seems to be trending that the radio frequency has been a little more effective for sure.
So, okay, this is like a layman question, right? So it's the goal of using it in eye care was to attempt to melt oil glands, right? So melt the oil in these oil glands. And...
We use it for doesn't do it too for even actually you can use the radio frequency to deliver heat to like chalazia as well. It's very effective for that as well to start breaking down tissue.
Is it just breaking down? Like, is it just melting oil or is it doing something more? Right? Because like just melting oil doesn't sound like you're not. Do you express right after or how does that?
We do. So with radio frequency, we do express, but that's the whole point of RF and that's what it's traditionally used for. It's skin tightening. It's collagen regeneration. And so again, around the eyes, everything's all connected. We're not just a system that like the meibomian gland just doesn't stand on its own island, just kind of hanging out there. You know, there's all the tissue around it. Everything plays a role. Blinks are affected by tight, loose skin. I mean, it's all. So ultimately, when we utilize it around the eyes, there's many benefits. So, you know, we use it to melt the glands for sure and get the oils to flow a little bit more naturally and kind of clear out the old so there's room for new. And then once you can maintain that. You know, and then around the eyes, that's where we kind of grew that. We're already right on their face. You know, how many patients have that little crow's feet that they're not happy with? It just grows and grows from there because we're right in there that we have their trust. We're working on treatments to benefit and a lot of, you know, blood vessels that travel to the eyelids that impact inflammation in the lids. It starts in the cheeks, you know, all these things are all connected. So managing and treating things with lasers and, you know, heat and whatever is indicated, depending on their condition around the eyes, ultimately helps the eye health.
Absolutely. Fascinating. So we were talking beforehand, you were talking about RF combined with microneedling.
Yeah, so we tell do that now this. Too. So that's actually, it's a skin treatment called Morpheus. So that's just one example of something kind of wild. And there's so many different skin treatments out there, so many different lasers, so many different cool things. And what Morpheus is it's actually, on the same instrument as our IPL is. And what it delivers is radio frequency and microneedling. Again, collagen stimulation, breakdown of tissue, kind of regeneration and resurfacing.
Interesting. So then that is more of an aesthetic as opposed, like, so that's an aesthetic.
That goes into aesthetics. Yeah.
And not so much dry eye.
That's right. Yeah. And then grows from there. So our aesthetician, to give you an example.
Yes.
As I mentioned before, we're doing, you know, laser hair removal, chemical peel, like all the things. There's patients love having the full package and love having that option. And again, being in a trusted environment in a, you know, optometry clinic or a medical clinic, it really gives that clout where patients are seeking care for things on their face, around their eyes from eye professionals, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is that barrier, like you said, of like, you know, we don't want to overstep the things that we're actually trained to do. And that's where for us, we really have separated the practice from a business perspective. So Andrew and Riaz have split. Aesthetics is now separate from dry eye. So I wholeheartedly have always from the start, I'm not trained in aesthetics. I'm not trained in skin. We make recommendations for dry eye. We treat dry eye, but we have professionals who are, you know, trained in aesthetics to provide those types of services.
Yeah. Makes sense. This is another stupid question. You mentioned hair removal. Does IPL, like if you did IPL too close to your eyebrow, would you remove your eyebrow?
Yes. It depends on the energy, but yeah. So we don't do IPL that would be close enough to hair follicles because absolutely you can like kill lashes and brows and we definitely don't want it. We haven't had that happen in our practice because there are safety techniques that you use when we're doing any procedure around the eyes that protect the hairs and their follicles from the energy, but that's, you can definitely damage
hairs. Or like over beards.
We don't do it over beards, of course.
Okay.
There's a few, we do have men in the clinic that when they're getting treatments for ocular rosacea,
yep,
they'll intentionally, you know, that kind of upper cheek area that, yep, may, some people will get the odd straggler and they don't want it there.
Yep.
It's,
yep,
very effective there. So we'll do it there, you know, and it's part of sometimes for some of these guys or and men and women, whoever, whatever, people that have stragglers that want, I mean, it definitely can, depending on the energy levels, has to be high enough to actually, you know, be at the right level to do anything for hair removal. But it's definitely effective.
Interesting. Love it. I love learning about this. Actually, years ago, I was like, I mean, I want to sell this to everyone because they need to know that as when you're a practice owner, you get to make these decisions and like make up your whole pro forma and decide if it's worth it for your office and decide if it's even what you want to put your time into. But back in when I was in Seattle, I put my whole heart into getting IPL at our office. I put a whole pro forma together. I was super passionate about it. I presented it to the board and it just was not in the board's. They voted no. And I was devastated because like I was running a dry eye clinic and granted that was like on the front end of when optometrists were doing it. There were definitely optometrists, maybe like 10 or 15 in the US doing it, but it just wasn't quite as common then. Now everyone has it. But I was just so sad and it's okay to like, that doesn't mean you're not practicing and dealing with dry eye, but if you don't have it, or even if maybe you just don't want to have it, just knowing who's around you that's available. My dog's all excited. He's like hyping me up. You got to know someone's around you that's available so you can refer or co-manage with someone nearby that has a device that you like.
I love that because that not only, I mean, of course, is going to be the best thing for your patient who needs something that you can't offer. That increases the referrals back too by working with the people around you. You know, that's definitely going to increase, not decrease the likelihood of having that kind of collaboration where you could send patients back and forth.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. At the time, the person that was, the only person in my area was Dr. Laura Perriman. And so I referred to her like every day for IPL and she referred back for scleral lenses and it was a perfect little relationship. So that's find lovely. Your thing, find your niche that you can excel at and collaborate if you don't have it. And it's okay that your practice doesn't have it. And maybe someday you'll have your own or maybe someday you'll convince your executive board to decide on this. But until then, it's okay.
Well, I think we've come to the end for today. We want to hear from you. So reach out to us with your feedback, questions, stories, things you're interested in hearing from us, either through our Instagram or Facebook. And we cannot close today's show without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for both making great products and for being amazing people to work with. Be sure to tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.